always push to learn. That's really, I think, a key. Always be willing to learn from the people around you, from the industry you're in, from the industry you're not in. That desire to grow and learn is one of the best ways to continue you through your path. And that really shines when other people meet you.
You're listening to the AngleFreeIT.com podcast, IT career and culture advice, free from corporate agendas. And now your host, the guy who's getting sick of people asking what Colorado is like after legal weed, Preston Kilburn.
All right. Today, I'm meeting with Luke Miskin, Director of Technology for Veolia. And Luke is one of the smartest people in the room, and he is going to share some insights with us about some of the decisions he makes when he interviews people and you know, some of the decisions that he's made in his career over the years. So I'm going to kick it off, and this is the first question I ask people in 30 seconds, hopefully, maybe a minute. Tell us your origin story. Where did you come from and how did you gain your superpowers, Luke? Go.
Professionally, I started at US West, which is now known as CenturyLink, as an engineer working on city-based loop systems for high-speed infrastructure. From there, I completed my degrees, and then I went to actually Geek Squad. I was one of the original in-home agents, helped roll it out nationwide. And then I sort of went from there into software engineering. I worked in aerospace and e-commerce, and currently in transportation. And I'm with a division of Veolia, just so we, because it's a big freaking company. I'm not the king on that hill yet. But yeah, a part of it called Z Trip, and that's where I am now.
All right, sweet. Okay, so on this podcast, we focus on basically what are the things that you've done to get where you're at.
Okay.
And giving advice to people who are maybe entering the career, they feel stuck. And so if you were entering the IT field in your work right now, what would you tell people to focus their skill building on? Like, what are the things that they should work on?
Yeah, so in my industry, which right now is transportation, it would be automation. If you're looking at anything, it's AI and automation. That's really where transportation will be going, whether it's over-the-road trucking or eventually the good old-fashioned Johnny Cab. You know, it's something that if I were looking for the future, I'd be trying to be in that part of the industry. On a grander scale, security is obviously going to be a huge one. Takes sort of a different brain to be willing to put up with that space, but security is going to be a big one. As long as we have identities and people want them, you need to secure those. Those really, for where I am, we don't really transport data of people very much. You username, passwords, everything's SALT, everything's SSL, everything's all that kind of encryption level. But, you know, it's a little bit different on a grander scale. That's where I would be looking if I was coming out right now. And I guess software engineering side, you know, Node.js, Angular.js. I'm in a .NET world, so I'd be looking, and I am also a believer in the .NET versus open source. Don't take that where you may. I've been in LAMP before. I've been in open source. I've been the Java man, and most of the industry that I work in and most of the large companies I deal with have moved away from that. So I'd be dealing with the .NET space and all the new Web.js, all that good stuff.
Sweet. Okay. So let's talk about your industry, because your industry is a little bit unique, right? Yeah, you've got some challengers.
Definitely.
What specific IT issues challenge your industry? And maybe your niche. Okay. Explain your niche a little bit. What you guys do?
I can do that. So Veolia as a big company does everything with transportation. So buses, paratransit, trash, refuse, reclamation, all that kind of stuff. It's global big stuff. Where I am, I oversee the taxi, limousine, and paratransit divisions of Veolia in the United States, specifically for our product Z-Trip. Z-Trip is most recognizable as an app, similar to some of the other ride-sharing booking apps, but specifically backed by licensed, insured drivers on the backside. And what we really do as an organization is try to get these companies who've existed under regulation, but with nearly no competition for about 120 years, to start using technology to better leverage what they do to bring better service into their space against the big competitors that they have that are really popular and new. And the big challenge there is most taxi companies or paratransit, which means medical-based or NEMA, non-emergency medical. So the NEMA transportation and paratransit or taxi and limousine are very often mom-and-pop shops, right? So they've got a call center, small most of the time. They have PCs in there that they probably have a weekend warrior buddy that takes care of them. They may or may not have servers, depending on if they're even on electronic dispatch or using technology to improve their world. Sometimes they're still on the good old Nextel push to talk. And so there's a lot of technology challenges there because they're using old tech or no tech to do something against the big competitors like Uber and Lyft, who, to be perfectly honest, are tech companies. They're an app company. That's what they do. They write an app in a tech space on a cloud-based backbone with unbelievable infrastructure behind it and hundreds of millions of billions of dollars sitting behind them versus Joe's Taxi in Cleveland, and Joe's Taxi has 25 drivers, and how's he supposed to compete? So that's the real challenge, and that's what my part of the organization does. We go to them and say, we have a dispatch, we have an infrastructure, stop dealing with that, do what you do best, which is relate with your drivers and that kind of stuff, and move over to our space and let us take care of all that tech stuff you don't get or don't want to get and move forward. And the challenge with that is, similar to a lot of other people out there that went through the banking changes or the hospital changes when they went from paper trail to tech trail. And it's an uphill battle trying to get people to understand, why do I need redundancy when I'm just Joe's Taxi out of Cleveland or, Dave's Limo in Arizona? Like, why do I need redundancy? Why do I need a web presence? Why do I care about an app? It's really just a mentality challenge, I would say.
It's a people thing.
It's definitely a people thing. Yeah.
Okay. So
old mindsets.
Okay, so speaking of mindsets,
right?
We're going to shift a little bit.
Okay.
We're going to talk about your people.
About
the people you hire or maybe sometimes unfortunately have to fire. But right. Let's talk about interviews for a second, okay? So when you interview people, and I'm going to ask you question 4 and question 5. And, listeners, I'm going to be honest with you. I gave Luke a heads up about a few of these questions. This is one of them. And talking about it before we had the mic rolling, question 4 and question 5 are kind of the same question, just from different angles, right? So question 4 is, are people that you interview at a disadvantage if they don't have a college degree? And are people that you interview at an advantage if they do have a degree? So let's talk about that for a second.
So personally for me, when I am interviewing, no, I do not believe for most of what I do, it has an advantage to have a degree. I would say experience or comparable certifications, especially on the infrastructure and engineering side. Those two, I would say, you know, if you walk in and you're Cisco certified or you're Microsoft certified or you have any of the great buzzes around you with that, that very often will overcome the mentality for that degree space for that. I will say that when we hire project managers or we're hiring, you know, sales or we're hiring any of the other non-tech spaces that I also interface with, that is very degree driven. You know, if you're going to come in and tell me that you're going to be doing financial stuff, you better have a financial back degree. If you're going to be sales, I need to see a, you know, an MBA. You know, we need to understand that you understand what business base is. But software engineering, infrastructure, virtualization, that kind of stuff, it's so much more about personality and equivalent experience, I guess is the best way to say it. I mean, I've hired fresh out of college brand new software engineers for mid-level positions because you look at what they did when they're in college or not in college, when they're out doing what they're doing. I'm sorry. So fresh out of coming into the industry, I should say. So first jobs, right? They've done freelance and now they're actually trying to get a real position on with a firm. And I look at what they did freelance and I look at the code that they've written or what to put on GitHub or, you know, any of the other open code emporiums and sort of judge them that way. You know, and sometimes I'll be perfectly honest, we look at people that have that degree and they come in, and I'm sure other tech guys out there, tech ladies out there have hit this. That degree is truly just a piece of paper for them. And you start ironing into a little bit of their understanding and you ask, you know, well, what's JSON or, you know, what's, how do you split up a virtualization space, a LUN, you know, and stuff like that. And they just don't know because all it is that paper. They didn't really pay attention to it. So I will also have to say that for people above me, or maybe in different age brackets, I do see a different mentality for that. So I would say they put a little bit more weight on that sheepskin than they do necessarily the, you know, the equivalent work or understanding.
The experience.
Yeah, the experience on it.
Okay.
Yeah, it's sort of a strange thing, but for me personally, no, it's the person and what they know and what they're doing.
Okay. So do you feel like that having the degree jumps through the HR filter?
Oh my gosh. Okay. So if we want to talk about SEO and all that kind of good stuff, yeah, if you're getting filtered by any of the Indeeds and things out there, oh yes, most certainly. Getting through that door is definitely impacted on whether or not you have a degree. If you have that degree, that wonderful little computer checkbox exists. And then when the person goes and searches and says, does require a degree, yes or no, you fit or you don't fit. So a lot of times HR may not even see you because of that. And it's unfortunate. It really is. And that's really, I mean, to everybody out there, that's where you have to overcome that with the people you know. You have to overcome that with getting out there and meeting, going to there's groups here in Colorado that you can get together as a bunch of tech groups,
like meetups.
Yeah, yeah. So go you know, go do your meetups and your black hat, white hat, whatever you're doing, and meet with people. And then when a job does open up, sometimes you can get around that filter because your buddy says, "Oh, I just met this guy. He was really interesting. I just met this lady. She knew her stuff. Like it's, you know." Let's get their resume. I'll grab it next time I see them, you know, and that networking portion is really important. I think there's a question about importance of things later, and that one we'll come back to on networking.
So for my listeners who are also readers, that's pillar number two And Luke has not read through this, so he doesn't know about any of this. So there's a little pillars. proof in the pudding. Yeah. Yeah, I know. I'm trying to find something catchy. Don't scrutinize me yet. But
there are some definite things that are musts.
But pillar number two is congratulations. You've been promoted to head of sales for your career.
Right.
And you know you need people to remember you.
Yes.
Right. And you can't do that at your desk. At your house,
nope.
Never participate.
Right.
And that's kind of hard. That's hard for some people to get out and do that.
Absolutely, yeah.
And I are somewhat extroverted. I don't know that that's a challenge. But I know for some people that is a real challenge. Right. But it's something that if you can find your people and, you know, finger quotes there, your people, find a meetup, man. Find something that you do or that you want to do. Most of the time, people at meetups are super cool and want to take people in.
And you have to remember that we're all sort of the same here. There's always going to be that thing. I don't care what the person looks like, how tough they are, how small they are, whatever it is. There's something you're going to relate on, whether it's, you know, maybe you're both gamers. Maybe you both like to ski. Maybe you like football. Maybe you enjoy arts and crafts. I mean, there's going to be something that if you're just willing to talk, not even about necessarily the space that you're in, the work that you do, you'll hit something, and that's how you get remembered. And people can just go back and say, "Oh, you know, that Preston guy, he was a good guy, and he, you know, loves to shoot rockets, you know, whatever it may be." And I like rockets too.
All right. So talking about interviews, what are, it doesn't have to be three. I have three written down here.
Right.
But what are three super annoying things that candidates do in interviews that you wish they were smart enough to recognize?
Right.
And everybody kind of seems to do this and it drives you nuts. Go.
Number one, first and foremost, you bring a cell phone into an interview, you're pretty much done in my book. You need to be attentive to what is going on. You sit and look at, I don't care what's going on your face on Facebook or whatever, but on your cell phone, unless your mom is in the hospital and that's what that text was, you don't need to be looking at it. And I can't tell you the number of, and it doesn't matter age bracket. Let me just preface it. It does not matter age bracket. I have had everyone across the gamut. And if you touch that cell phone in that interview, when it's our time together and you're supposed to be hitting me with your impact and selling your existence in my space, you lose it immediately because you didn't dedicate the time that was necessary to it. So that's a big number one. I can't tell you the number of people who just get axed instantly because Instagram and, you know, whatever Kardashian on the feed was more important than getting that job. That's really a huge one that's happened recently. You know, a lot of people will be worried about presence, right? And getting everything right. That's not really a thing. The next one for me is confidence. You're not going to get everything right. A good interview makes you get things wrong, makes you feel uncomfortable, because what they're trying to do is get you out of that space to see how you're going to handle adversity once you get hired on. So the next one is a confidence, because people avoid the questions, right? People will not answer it or give the "I don't know." So maybe it boils down to that. Number two is "I don't know." If you say "I don't know" in an interview, that doesn't really fly. You know, you can say, "I'm not sure if this is the best answer, but this is what I would try." Especially, man, if you're going for a troubleshooting position, you any idea is better than no idea, right? If you're going for an infrastructure position and they ask some kind of crazy off the wall thing, like which port, you know, which IRQ port is a mouse, I wouldn't necessarily expect you to know that. But you could say how you can look it up in Windows, or why IRQ doesn't exist, or why it got phased out. And you could give all these, and it's not phased out, but you know, it's not prevalent and in front anymore. And you can give those type of answers. I don't know is just not really acceptable. I don't know is I give up, right? And in the business world, especially in tech, we are relied upon to not I give up. Because so many people look to us for answers, even in spaces we can't answer. So, I mean, that's definitely one and two. A third one, honestly, all the other ones sort of just fade away. I've had fidgety people. I've had the person that moves back and forth in the seat, can't make eye contact, you know, whatever it may be. All that's pretty forgivable. It's more about just trying to relax beforehand. That tension can come off. So maybe figuring out a way to relax. You know, I remember when I first started interviewing that I would just be nervous because, you know, you're just coming out of college. You're just trying to get your first job, whatever it may be. And I would sit and either sing a song to myself that I really dug and just sort of mellow that, something I know to get in my brain that I just know what this is, or meditate if you like to meditate. But if you can get even just a little foothold of relaxation before you go in, that tension melts away. But it's not really a fault. I don't think I have a third. It's just sort of, you know, be yourself, I guess, is a good one.
Sweet. Sweet. I just want to point out, listeners, go check out the website. If you haven't signed up for the email list, the thing for signing up for the email list is the checklist. And I have that on the checklist to take off your phone. And something that I got yelled at once, and it wasn't an interview. It was actually because I'm a consultant and I sit down with directors and C-levels and people doing the work and across the gamut. We had a presentation and I left my Apple Watch on.
Oh, no.
And I don't remember what was happening. Something was blowing up my phone. I didn't have my phone. My phone was sitting in my backpack, but my wrist was like beep, 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 like tugging on me like a 4-year-old. And I looked at apparently, unbeknownst to me, I had no idea. It's subconscious, guys. You do it with your phone. You do it with your watch. Right. You don't realize it. And I had somebody say, I was really frustrated.
Right.
Are you too good for my time? I made time to be with you.
Right.
Well, what are you talking about? Well, you kept looking at your watch. Like you were frustrated about the time. I said, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. I had my phone on and my phone was connected to my watch and a bunch of work emails were coming in. I'm really sorry. So take the phone off, take the watch off, go sign up for the email, go sign up to the email list. And that is on the checklist because I do this all the time. I still sometimes forget. Checklist will help you.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Let's see. I'm just going to flip these questions around a little bit. I haven't asked you about this one.
No,
what is the dumbest thing you've done in an interview?
Oh, dumbest thing I've done in an interview? Oh, dang. That is a good question. I remember a distinct period after a company that Preston and I actually worked together at closed their doors. Preston wisely left earlier than I did, which good on him. But I gave myself a very short time frame. I had to be hired at a new job within 2 weeks. And I did so many interviews, I stopped even counting, 5-6 a day. And it was anybody that would call me. I didn't care if it was a recruiter, a headhunter, an actual company, didn't matter. And I remember sitting down for an interview and completely forgetting who I was there to see and thinking it was an interview I had earlier that day and calling the person who I was meeting the other name, not once, but the entire interview. And the person just let it go. And at the end of it said, hey, just so you know, my name is not Mike. And I was just like, oh my goodness. And, you know, it was sort of a wake up call to me where you can truly, really, honestly overload yourself. And so pacing is important. I'll tell you right now, the hardest job you will ever have is finding a job. Like when you truly dedicate to getting a job or starting a career, whatever it may be, that is a 40-hour a week minimum type of endeavor. And it's difficult. It's hard. It's a lot of time. It's a lot of effort. But you still have to make the time for yourself to not overload. So I would say that was it. That was a huge flub. I've had the same thing everybody else has had. I've forgotten, how to write C#. I just don't even remember how to do it. Semicolons. What are those? I've done those things where you just lock up in an interview. And when that happens, that's that thing where you just have to take a breath, get yourself centered again, continue. And you can say to an interviewer, just give me a second to get my thoughts together here and then go from there. So,
yep. Super important tip, guys. When you're in an interview, don't say or that's a good question to try and buy yourself time. I would prefer it if I was interviewing you for you to say, let me think about that, right? Because what I don't want you to do is go off crazy and half-cocked and be like, right. Yes, what you want to do? Unless you really know the answer to that question.
Right.
And 9 times out of 10, when you have to throw in the, that's a good question. Well, yeah, that's why we asked it. Yeah.
Oh, good. I'm glad we have validation on our interviewing process.
Yeah. So just take a second. It's okay to even be silent. Like,
oh, sure.
Silence sometimes gives you a little bit of power.
Right.
You know, it's okay to be quiet.
People wait for your words when silence occurs. That's for sure.
Okay. So, it is said that when you show up for an interviewer, that interviewer has roughly 7 seconds to judge your appearance and 5 minutes to figure out if you're going to hire this person or not.
Yeah.
So besides the answers to the questions,
right.
Like what are some things that help you to know, yeah, this is a person that I dig and I want to hire them on my team?
Okay. I'm going to break it down a little bit because I interview for numerous different gamuts. I interview for sales and for project management and for also IT stuff. So I'm going to lump the non-IT and the IT. So we're going to break those into the two sections. So for non-IT, it's a personality interview almost more than anything. If you're coming in for a sales position, the thing you're selling to me is you at that time, right? So I'm going to look at the way you're put together. So how, are you in good appearance, right? And I'm not talking, did you show up in an Armani suit? I don't have an Armani suit. You don't have to show up like that, but are you well kept when you show up? So I have that short amount of time. And then it's about, for those folks, the way you hold yourself in the interview. So your posture, if you're keeping eye contact, if you are dynamic in your speaking, if you can pace well, if you avoid the pause phrases, like, duh, whatever it may be. Those are important. In the IT space, I really get the personality very quickly. Having been in engineering since through college, that kind of space, I get when people are the introvert, the extrovert, the multivert, whatever it may be, and can pick that up pretty quick and can change my pace of expectation based on that. I don't expect the person who is honestly the guy who's going to work in a data center and the loud servers around nobody but can fix the worst problem in 5 minutes to be a dynamic speaker. It's just not a thing, right? But what I will start judging them on is aptitude of what they're doing. I have a truly unbelievable VM guy that had to teach himself the Windows VM. I'm spacing on the name.
Hyper-V,
thank you. So he had to teach himself Hyper-V. He's a VM guy. He's teaching himself Hyper-V, but I knew he would succeed at it because that is just the person he is. He's not the most dynamic speaker. You're not going to put him up in front of a crowd, but he knew his stuff. And when we interviewed, we could tell he knew his stuff because we wrote really good questions and we based it on that. With software engineers, we always give a code test. And I'm not necessarily looking for you to get the code right because honestly, we give a code test that you can't pass. We give a code test that is very difficult with a short amount of time frame. And we're looking for more of an algorithm than an answer, right? So if you can understand how this should be put together and can effectively pseudocode it, we're going to hit there. So past the first 5 minutes, you're really just, you go from that, how do they look, to what's their personality? And an interviewer, a good interviewer, will do that personality quick because they're basing it on not only will this person fit just because they're a reasonable personality base, but also does it fit in my company? If I'm a large company, it's okay to have a massive gamut of personalities. But in a smaller company, you really need to make sure team cohesion exists without really getting crushed, because you can have a company close just because you hire a new person and you can't get the team to work together. So really it's knowing your stuff, I would say, after that 5 minutes. In the IT field, I feel like it's really knowing your stuff. And then in the other fields, it's really about being a salesperson. You know, if you are a project manager, you're going to start talking about the tools you use, how you manage stuff. And in IT, you're going to start doing your code. You're going to be breaking down how you build a VM. You're going to be showing how, you know, the different levels of networking, whatever it may be. And that's where you have to start standing on that on your own. And it's important, but the big thing I have to remind everybody is don't get too worked up about it. You know, don't psych yourself out. That is such a huge thing when somebody will be nailing an interview and then they'll throw you a curveball on purpose, because there's always that one question where they're trying to really trip you up. And sometimes a witty off the cuff response is better than silence or no response. So don't get too worked up about the right answer.
Okay. I like it. So what are your goals?
My goals personally?
Yeah.
So my goals personally are, And so as we're talking about this, I'm noticing how often I'm using, which is something I need to work on apparently, but my goal right now is to continue my progression and understanding across a wide breadth of what I do. I have done numerous things from electrical engineering and computer sciences. That's my background. So robotics, automation, process efficiency, building circuit boards. That's what I've moved through that whole gamut. And right now I'm moving from a director of technology to a CTO. That's my next level of understanding. So right now my focus is on effective management strategies across not only, like I said, I'm in charge of technology, but support also falls under technology. And I work as very often the head of the sales engineering team. So I also do sales, right? So I'm working to get a better depth of understanding across the breadth that I have to handle. And that progression for me is to move from a DT, a director of technology, to a CTO. And in my company, which, like I said, is quite large, there are numerous directors of technology for the subdivisions that report to the CTO. And I work directly with him on a regular basis, and my direct CEO for my division too. So that's one part of it. And that's the non-tech side. The tech side of me is a little bit different right now, because since I've been pulled out of everyday code, everyday infrastructure, everyday server control, all that kind of good stuff, I have to dive myself in on personal time for that. So I'm going back and really working with Node.js and Angular.js and continuing to take those skill sets that I know are super important and push them and understand them outside of what I already need to know for work. So my goal is to really be able to drive our new web-based products out of the space that they're in, which is mainly .NET, ASP.NET, some MVC, mostly on Razor Backbone, into a MVC, Node.js, Angular.js type of environment, so that we can truly get multi-platform cohesion. And the other thing that I'm really trying to learn is the app land. And I cannot stand Objective-C. I love all you iOS folks out there that get it, but I loathe it. And I'm really trying to get over that. So I'm trying to use tech to get into that space. But that's where my goals are, to expand those. Yeah.
I'm just going to touch on something, listeners. That's pillar number four. And again, Luke has not read through these things. He's not a shill. So I'm just pointing these things out.
What is pillar number four then?
Pillar number four. I'm going to read it to you verbatim. Assuming your skills are set is career death.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because... Yeah.
Especially in our space. Are you kidding me?
You've known me a long time, right? Left to my own devices, right. I would be the master of a 3COM phone system and 3COM switches, which were awesome. And they could do 10 megabits.
You would be the best there was at that.
Yeah.
You can never assume that what you know is the end. It just doesn't work that way.
Yeah. Okay. So, all right. Maybe not a question for you, but your observations. Mm-hmm. I will point out that Luke is around the same age as me. But how do you feel about ageism in IT?
Oh, wow. That's a great question. It definitely exists.
I know. That's why I'm asking.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a good question. I'm verifying your interview process.
That's right. You can be silent. It's okay.
Yeah, I can. I don't know how that plays though on a podcast. Silence, you know, that doesn't work. but there's so many articles right now. The Google one, obviously, if you haven't gone to read the Google lawsuits and that, it's a real deal. It's a real problem. I will be open and honest in the fact that I have felt it before. Both being interviewed and being the interviewer, right? And I'll break it down. When I first went into aerospace, I was young. And I had already had 5 years of engineering degree. I'd already started a company and rolled it out. And I still was not being accepted because it was my first job after college. I was a young kid, you know, and aerospace is an old dog's world, man. That's just, the FAA has been around quite a long time and they control all of it. And, you know, you've got FAA and FCC and all these different things that look over that. And when you get hired there, you know, it's something where you're very scrutinized. And then on the interviewing side, so when I've been the interviewer, I have thought about it because of the fact that I have worked at companies that are very often small, 5-10 people in a team. That's the whole... I helped a company move out of Australia into the U.S. And I was employee number 2 in the U.S. And when we started growing that, we... had to think about personality almost more than skill set. And I remember sitting in interviews with folks that were either older or younger, it didn't matter, and sort of thinking, wow, well, they fit as a personality into this, right? And then eventually you get over it and you're just like, well, it doesn't matter. Their skill set is the key, but it still is definitely out there. It is a real honest problem. And it's sort of because of that pillar number 4 we're going back to here. A lot of people get stagnant in what they were learning. And so, you know, the young kid comes out thinking they know everything because they know the new hot stuff. But the new hot stuff still isn't used in 99% of the rest of the business world. And so they get stuck because they think they know it all and they're not willing to learn, or vice versa. There's the guy who is towards the tail end of their career and hasn't chosen to learn those new things. And, you know, there's only so many times a company can hit with that before they start getting shy. Definitely a thing. You know, and it's going to, I think it's going to continue to be one, and you really just have to be okay with it. And I don't, not that to say that it is a good thing it exists or that we have to just be happy that it does, but you just have to accept that it does. And you have to understand that sometimes you're going to interview and you're going to get hit with it. And that's just the nature of the beast. And the strong-willed individual will continue to go and interview and overcome that. And sometimes if you get hit with it a lot, you might want to go a little bit introspective or talk to your friends or family and say, what do you think it is? You know, is it this? Is it that? Maybe you do need to learn new tech, or maybe you are the brash kid that needs to be like, okay, I know everything there is to know about Node.js. oh, wait, I just signed on to a company that's still in .NET 2.5. Like, what the heck am I going to do here? You know, it's a bummer is the big thing. And as I, you know, continue through my career, it's a worry where you, towards the tail end, the not necessarily the twilight, but I guess it's the, you know, the midlife of your career, that kind of thing.
Yep.
You start looking for that job that's going to carry you for those extra years, and you don't necessarily bounce as much as you do in the IT field, which I'm sure lots of the listeners out there, you know, 3 years lifespan, bounce around. And
yep,
that starts
yep
changing, I think, as you're in a company and get a little older.
Yeah, yeah, totally. Totally. And, you know, if you're looking for some community, you know, come hit us up on Facebook or LinkedIn, careermap.tech. Or, you know, seriously, I can't stress this enough. We want to be your intermediary, but most of the time we're not going to be a replacement for real community and real people. So find your meetups, find your people, find your tribe, local to where you are at. Even if it's a meetup group that really doesn't necessarily 100% port to what you do,
right,
when you have people who you can look at in the eye and they will give you an honest answer to a question, super important.
Well, and I don't even discount people that are necessarily not even in your field. I can't tell you the number of times I learn something from a salesperson. Yeah. Not necessarily about, you know, how to rebuild a VLAN,
right,
but certainly about how to dress or carry yourself, or just be more personable. Or I can't tell you the number of times I've been told, dude, you are sort of a dick, you know, and it won't be by a peer. It'll be by somebody in a different group entirely. And that's important. So don't discount any of those folks, even if they are not in your group, you know, if they're not in your direct IT space.
I like it. I like it. So speaking of, dude, you were kind of a dick. Yeah. How, my next question here, man, you are just knocking them out today, Luke. So
Segway master.
Next question. How do you deal with the general, I haven't come up with a good word for this, but I like salty. How do you deal with the general saltiness level? And for the listeners who don't know about this or haven't experienced this, welcome to IT. There's a bunch of dicks. There's a bunch of people who are just freaking rude. There's a large percentage of us that I'm going to call it like it is. There, I would say out of all industries, maybe barring physical engineering, we have the highest level of employees that are on the autism spectrum. Don't care about your feelings. Right. Don't care about social cues. Tell you exactly what they're thinking.
Right.
And a lot of the time, it's not wrong, right? But how do you deal with that? Like
the tactless, yeah. The who doesn't have tact out there? It's definitely a thing, and I'm gonna break it down in a few different ways. So back when I was rolling Geek Squad out, I was in charge of one of the local stores here in my area, and we would break it down by where the person worked. So we knew if the guy was sort of a dick, but he was good at fixing computers, he stayed back in the cave and he was a cave monkey. And so we used it by geographic location, right? And that sort of does translate into the actual real, well, that's a real job, but you know, the greater IT career space, where sometimes the physical location and who you meet, are you customer facing or not customer facing? So sometimes that's how we deal with it, by placing them in a position that is going to either be customer facing or not customer facing. For those of the folks in support, I think support gets hit with this the most. I have experienced it myself. I run a couple call centers as part of what we do, and I have had to go and train those call centers. And I am guilty, like many others, of the malaise of being asked the same question for the 86,000th time in the last hour. And how do you deal with that? Well, you have to remember, and this is sort of a pat on the back of most of the folks in IT, a lot of people in IT are really smart. This is a field that is very often math driven. It is very often cutting edge. It's very often stuff that other people don't understand. It's called a computer language because it is a language. It's a foreign language. It's like learning French or Spanish or German or Latin or any of the other languages. Not everybody can do it. You may not have a brain that does it. You also, if you're out there building different tiers of architecture, whether it's virtualization or networking or security or firewalls or whatever, that's like being an architect. You are literally building walls. I mean, that's why we call them firewalls. Yes, they're virtual, but it's still the same kind of thing. Those are not... gosh, this sounds terrible. I don't have a better say.
Just those
are not.
Yeah,
those are not low IQ things, right? Those are things where you do have to be able to understand that space, and you or we in IT very often become entitled. We feel like we are better than everybody else because, I know how to reset a password and I can do that in my brain. And I can remember 75-digit passwords. And, you know, that's for the support guys that get the same phone call about how Janine forgot that her password is the name of her favorite dog every day for the last 30 days. That kind of stuff builds an entitlement. But you have to remember that this world is full of people across different spectrums. And just because they may not be good at X, I bet they're really good at Y. And you probably aren't good at Y.
Yeah.
And that's okay. That's really good. Because if we were all really good at X, then Y would never happen. And let's give it a real world idea. If I'm really good at building VMs, but I can't run a combine, and everybody does that, is anybody eating? No, we can't grow wheat. We can't yet, right? So it's important to have that different skill set. And you can't, you have to take it on your own shoulders. You can't be that stereotype. You have to be a joyful servant, okay? You have to be that person who is willing and happy to help. And very often, the best thing you can do to help is to train. And that's where you really start defining those people who are going to continue to be a problem and hurt our industry and those people that are going to lift it out. If you're willing to take that extra time to train that person, not once, not twice, not three times, but maybe 5 or 10 on how to do this or how to do that or help them take notes for it, then there will be that time, I promise you, where that person doesn't have to call you. And they can fix it themselves. And then you know what? Bobby can learn over Janie and help Janie figure out the same darn problem that he was having because he's been trained how to do it. And you're not eliminating your job. You're just taking away the chaff from the wheat. I'm going back to combines there. You get it?
I like it. Yeah, I like the circular reference there.
But it is a real problem that as a manager, you have to deal with and you have to understand that personality base and sort of split it. But then you also, as a manager, have to help train those IT individuals, that patience, that understanding. So it's that thing that continues just going up the hill. Some stuff rolls downhill. This rolls uphill, where you want to help train above and below the understanding around you.
Totally. And that's, listeners, just pointing this out. It's pillar number one. It's way easier to help people up the ladder than keep them down on the bottom rung.
Absolutely.
It totally helps. And it totally, you know, I cannot tell you the importance of, you know, I don't think this is a VMware thing, but it's the first time that I've ever actually been formally trained, since we're talking about training, not cert training, but like people training, see one, do one, teach one, right? So right. I'm going to show you how to do it.
Right.
I'm going to watch you do it, and then right. I go make you train somebody else to do this, else. Right?
Yes. Yes.
So when I interface with customers, it's like, hey, here's how to do this thing. It's super cool. This is why you bought this product.
Right.
It's amazing. Okay, now I'm going to watch you do it.
Yeah, your turn.
And I'm going to put up some guardrails, right. And I'm going to sit here, but I'm going to watch you do it so that you get it. Then I'm going to sit in the audience, and I'm going to watch you train somebody else,
absolutely.
Right? Because that enables you to really have mastery of at least this one subject, right?
Yeah, you remember it. You can start telling other people.
Absolutely. And I just want to add on what Luke is saying here is that this always comes back. I swear to you, this comes back. That person that you train may end up being a CIO 20 years from now.
Sure.
and maybe ageism hits you 20 years from now and you get popped out of a job for this whatever, reason or the other,
yeah, whatever reason.
You know, the CEO wants to hire his nephew or whatever, and you have a big network, right. And oh my gosh, this person totally, I love them. Right. They helped me. They trained me.
Right. That's a huge thing.
So let's see. Okay. So really quick, we've got about a minute left here, Luke.
Okay.
If you had one tip to give to people beginning their careers, what would it be?
In a minute, one tip. Wow. Always push to learn. That's really, I think, a key. Always be willing to learn from the people around you, from the industry you're in, from the industry you're not in. That desire to grow and learn is one of the best ways to continue you through your path. And that really shines when other people meet you.
Okay. What one tip would you give to people that are pivoting from another career, mid-career,
right,
into IT?
Confidence. Absolutely. You've done it once and it doesn't matter. So if you were a welder and now you're getting into IT, you learned how to do something, welding, that not everybody knows how to do. And that should give you confidence in yourself, bet in yourself, that you can move to this new space and still do it. Because you've already done something. You've already made an accomplishment. So you're going to do that again. It's just going to be a little bit different. And don't get overwhelmed by it. It's just a new step.
I like it. All right. Well, thanks for sitting with us. And thanks for answering questions.
Absolutely.
Anything you want to talk about or, you know, give out to the listeners that you're really into that they should go check out?
Right now, I mean, not really. I really would say the big thing for me is just making sure that you are good to the people around you. Going back to that point you made, I can't tell you how A, rewarding it is to help somebody else, and B, valuable it is. For those that believe in karma or whatever else out there, it really does pay. And to just resonate with what Preston was saying, I've, like I said, helped train call centers. Well, I'll tell you what, when my CEO goes and talks to the people at the call center, which he does, and they say that Luke was just awesome and helped us learn, or, you know, whoever else we send out there, and they knock it out of the park, not because they were awesome or got it all right the first time, but just because they were kind, that really resonates above you too. So
nice.
That's the key.
I like it. All right. Well, listeners, if you have any questions, go ahead and hit us up on the website, careermap.tech. If you haven't signed up for the email list, I know I keep pumping this, but sign up for our email list, and we have a checklist for interviewing. Super handy. It has little things on there, right? Like, do you know where you're going? If you're flying, when do you land? Do you know how to get to your airport? Do you know how you're picking up your rental car? Do you know if the rental car company closes? Stupid little things that those of us that have done this a few times have maybe gotten stuck before.
Right.
And when I say those of us, I mean me, because I'm so dumb sometimes when it comes to this stuff, and I've had to make myself smart. So go ahead and sign up, careermap.tech. Sign up to the email list, and we can send that out to you. If not, find us on Facebook or LinkedIn, and we can get you those resources as well. And I hope you're having a great week, and we'll talk to you soon. Thanks.